Is that okay?
Meeting order. House Bill 645 by the Governor for Natural Resources Supplement, Chance Crump.
We brought it up before. I don't have any amendments or anything to propose to it. Mr. Chairman, we spent, about a third of $1 million on this, if we approve this appropriation. I'm not satisfied that they, didn't know about it last year, but there's no question that some work has been done on D2, so. If you wanna treat them like you do the university, you can try to take, make, eat some money out of administration and looking at their lapse figure and their, expenditures today, they could probably find it in some of it at least, in some of their areas of the department. But it's up to the committee. I, personally think they've offered no excuse as to why they didn't request a budget change last year.
Well, it's their problem. But if they had to go back and absorb some, how much do you think they could absorb in their existing budget?
Have you got that,
I've seen enough to think that it'd be better to let them go and be able to then, fight some other issues and help them.
Don't wanna hurt the program if they're lapsing monies.
Oh, no, I'm not worried about that. I'm just saying, you know, the fact that.
D2 seems to have a connotation that you're not supposed to have to dine, but that's a bunch of bullshit.
Well. I'd be.
Sorry.
No, peanut, you're like.
Yeah, right. But I'm just. I think you got the picture. I think this point that.
Mr. Chairman, their overall appropriation for the entire department is $41,379,000. At the end of February, or two-thirds of the way through the year, they still had 37.7% of their budget remaining, which is about 4%, more than what they need, or means that they could last as much as $1.5 million. Now, some of that might be federal, but obviously there's enough to pick up things like $15,000 are a portion of the $255,000.
Okay, send it back to them then and tell them. How much did they lapse last year?
I'm not sure, but I don't know. One comment I'd make.
That division lapsed, as I recall, about $80,000 last year, but I mentioned that to them. They said a considerable portion of that was federal. They didn't have the exact general fund.
In the oil and gas division, however, they've got, well, for instance, they've got quite a bit of vacancy with all those unfilled, those jobs, positions and stuff like that. So $15,000 there would be no problem.
Yeah, why don't you send back them one more time?
This appropriation would be, affect that division.
But they can make a transfer.
I don't get uptight about the 15, but I think at this point here, it's a tactical mistake.
You watch them, give them one day and tell them, and watch them bring that figure down.
Oh, sure, they can bring the figure down.
And not hurt their program. I'm not trying to hurt their program.
What other planners in your concern?
Well, I think we're spending too much on D2 for what we're gonna get out of it. I'm not arguing on that. But the thing still, at this time, I think it's a tactical error to make the penny ante cuts, you know, when they obviously, they should have had it in last year's budget. They were right close to the time we were folding it up and didn't. But you say, okay, so they made a mistake and didn't get her in, and it's about a three-week mistake from the look of it, from their time schedule. Because they came within 3 weeks of knowing they were gonna need this. In other words, the top knew they were gonna need it, but the staff didn't know it until time. I'd say at this point, let them have that supplemental and then reduce on lapses. You know you're gonna get some of these other lapses. So that you're not cutting D2, you're cutting, you know, you're taking that vacancy and turnover out, and you're reducing so it comes out of this year's budget. And let that supplemental go. I don't, you know, I'm not of that tight about it if you wanna send it back, but I think it's a tactical error that cut deep.
We can't cut this year's budget.
You don't have to, you're gonna get a lapse out of it, and we can calculate that lapse when we do our budget.
Well, if they're gonna lapse anyway, why not make them take this out of the lapse rather than...
Cause I'm not sure that they're gonna, I'm not sure what the lapse is gonna be, and neither are you. And I don't feel comfortable cutting D2, even though I think we're spending too much money on D2. But the thing is that it's, you know, a line, a fraction different can mean a hell of a lot of money, so I'm not prepared to second guess it, knowing so little about it. Well, we're not gonna win the biggies in Congress, you know, we're filed to lose those.
What are you hoping for the biggies?
Oh, things like 39, some of those changes. We're gonna get some boundary changes that can save the state a lot of money. But as far as the emotional issues, hey, we're not gonna get there. In other words, they'll look over the thing that, no, this mineral deposit shouldn't be in there, and if you adjust that line over a few miles, you leave that out, and you take this area that doesn't have minerals in and count it in your acreage. This, I think we can be effective at. But when you start talking about the fact that, you know, when you get into the argument on subsistence hunting, like I saw Huber the other day, hey, that's a loser.
Well, this funding is not for those arguments, this funding is for the boundary changes.
The boundary changes, that's what I'm saying. I think this is one of the areas we can show profit in, the boundary changes. Because there are some boundary changes that don't make sense, and if you can present the facts to them, they acknowledge that those don't make sense and adjust. They'll come out with the same acreage because they'll squeeze it over somewhere else, but they'll... I think this is one of the areas that the state can show a real profit on, and I don't feel comfortable about it. Even though I can't say that I don't agree with a lot of your criticism on the way it was.
When do you want it back?
You contact...
You'll contact them? Tell them to cut back and make changes from their vacancies, not to cut the program, but cut the money in question. Do we have any other bills?
No.
Geez, they don't have a goddamn bill.
Well, I'll try and get, you know, I've got that 25-cent license, John, and I'll try and get that one out, but I just want to make sure that it squeezes in the right spot. You know, right now, it's better than 60% in Anchorage and Fairbanks alone, and that never was what it was intended for. But I just want to make sure that it doesn't undo it where we want it.
Very good. We have, let's see, 3 days of meetings this week, 2 days of subcommittee, and then starting Monday morning is University of Alaska, Monday afternoon is close on the budget. Tuesday morning is University of Alaska. Tuesday afternoon is closed on budget. Wednesday, Thursday, Friday is closed out. The House has their budget. In Congress?
Yeah.
We should have that by tomorrow. Anything else?
Their budget's on the
counter. No, it's on the caucus.
They've been pushing hard, but, you know, that's...
As long as they get the finance group, they'll get the whole legislature. They have the majority.
Oh, I don't think they'll have any trouble passing their budget, but neither do we passing it the first time. It's after that.
We've never had problems. Maybe back in that whole time.
We used to fight the budget. No, the last time, the only time the budget ever lost was way back in the early days of statehood when Blodgett led the ice block against the budget and defeated it. And John Longworth and Hammond stood up and changed their vote from no to yes to stop Blodgett. And Don Harris, turned around and said, we don't think much of a man who deserted his party at a time like that. Changed my vote. But it was a very shaky. They've been there. I don't know how long that was there.
Okay, that's all we have. Thank you.
Came at different times.
Okay.
Martin Cash for all the world.
That's pretty good.
Call the meeting to order, President, Senator Crop.
We pick up, 266, Council of 266.
Is there an objection? Without objection, we have the floor, Council of 266. Get the floor.
The, sponsor and his bodyguard here, they wanna testify.
What's your?
266.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. What you should have would be CS for 266, I presume that's what you.
Right.
The title indicates, Mr. Chairman, members, it's an act related to creation of alternative power resource revolving loan fund, which is kind of high blue words the titles are. What it really means is that, whereas those of us who live in the urban center can pay a monthly utility bill and be provided with power, what somebody out in the bush could do, and this could be a replacement of villages to somebody's, small, recreational cabin someplace. They could borrow money from the state, purchase, for instance, a windmill, which is the thing that we kind of focused on, although that's not the only source of energy that we're talking about. And pay, say, the equivalent of a monthly utility bill and have their alternative power provided for them. As the bill indicates, the loan fund would be available for energy sources other than fossil or nuclear fuel. Would include, but not be limited to, windmills, water and solar power devices. With water, we're thinking, you know, not a big high blue, hydro projects, but small, you know, kind of, one man, four cabin type, couple wheel arrangements, that sort of thing. The, any one loan could not exceed $10,000. I would estimate that the vast majority would not even come anywhere near that, but given the cost of transportation into some of the big bush communities, we thought it would be unrealistic to have anything less than that as the top amount. Mr. Dankert is our resident expert on windmills. If you have any questions on the cost of those, installations, he can provide the information along that line.
He's charged for that one.
And, as a safeguard to the state, obviously, we don't want to make the state making bad loans. As one safeguard, we are requiring that the user provide initially at least 80% of the cost of the purchase. And that, again, we're not giving anything away. We're talking about 8% money on this, which is, you know, not a giveaway, it's not super high either, it's just a good, it's a good return on the investment for the state, but it's also, you know, a pretty fair, amount for the purchaser. And the way we have it set up, as we have in other revolving loan fund bills, we work through the Department of Commerce under the present loan fund operation. They estimate that there's no fiscal note on this because it's not gonna cost them anything extra. They're already set up for these types of loans anyway, and the additional cost would be just minuscule, so they couldn't identify a real fiscal note. The Department of Revenue, of course, would purchase these mortgages at the request of the Department of Commerce and Economic Development. It's a very simple concept, as I say. The guiding idea behind it was to give somebody out in the bush, in the villages or recreational communities, sort of the equivalent of the monthly utility bill that those of us in urban settings, you know, finds it convenient and easy. And there's no way you can have that out in the bush right now, short of some sort of a setup like this. That's about the long and short of it. If you have any questions, I hear Mr. Dankert.
Senator Mullen?
Yes, Representative Miller. The thought strikes me, though, if a few people want to get together and start considering damming up a creek to provide a little water, I'll bet by the time that the environmental considerations are taken care of, I'll bet they back out of it.
You know, you may be right in, you know, 90% or 100% of the cases, but at least, you know, the vehicle is here. If they start.
Windmills.
Yeah, mostly we centered this on windmills, but we didn't want to, you know, tie our hands. If somebody's got a stream running by his cabin, or there's a small stream, running by a village or something like that, and they can meet all the environmental conditions that, you know, the state or the feds or anybody else, then why not, you know, let them set up a little, as I say, Pelton Wheel operation or something like that. I'm aware of a guy over on Admiralty Island, he's got a small lodge up there, and he's been generating his own power for years, and it's very small. The dam is kind of laughable, it's all about 4 inches high, but that's all he needs, to, you know, divert just a little bit of water into this Pelton Wheel operation. And the whole thought behind this bill is, you know, think small, just think of, you know, a little guy. And if there are considerations other than money that preclude him from establishing his little water operation, well, you know, that's too bad, at least he tried. At least the money part is not the obstacle.
That's the challenge.
Mm-hmm. Same to it.
Have you thought of just hooking it to one of the other loan programs, like a home loan program or anything like that, where additional funds or separate funds can be used for this, so we don't have to...
Well, we don't really have a home loan program. Obviously, the home loan program is a veteran's deal, and everybody's out, cutting everybody that isn't a veteran out of it. We kind of thought, too, that we ought to identify this as a separate thing, just so that the department would get the message that we do indeed want them to encourage this sort of thing. There's actually an additional benefit. Right now, within the state of Alaska, and this is probably collectively all of our fault, very little is being done in the way of research, particularly on the state level, virtually nothing except for a little project at the University of Alaska on alternate energy. At least the existence of these windmills, for instance, you could end up getting a lot of data that might be of interest, particularly if somebody wants to invest in a home in some solar activity. They could maybe tie in the condition of the loan might be if they provide data. So it would have an additional benefit there. But we wanted to identify it as a separate loan fund so that the department would get the strong message that hey, this is absolutely one of the conditions one of the functions that we want the state to be loaning money for. And I couldn't think, I also thought the same thing you did, I couldn't think of any other logical thing. If we were generally in the home loan business, it would be at least logical to append this onto it, but we're not.
Yes, Senator Kenny?
Now, Mike, are these type of loans available commercially?
My understanding is that, you know, technically they probably are. Technically, I could maybe go into the bank here in Juneau and say, if I was somebody from Tuktuk and say, yeah, I'd like to borrow $10,000 and $4,000. And there's no legal reason why I couldn't get that. As a matter of fact, you know what the act of the bank has been to home loans. Well, if you don't, I think any of the real members will tell you, you get the long end of the line. I mean, you finally work up your way to the first line end of the line, you still get screwed because they're just, this sort of money is just not available.
Is this happening where people have gone into this type of a loan with one line?
On this type of a loan? No, but I've heard so many stories, you know, how many, just look at the state's own program. It was even set up for rural housing, for instance, and the banks and everything else have channeled it into the, where the sure money is. Now we feel, at least the house position on this thing was, that these people out in the bush are a good loan. I mean, this isn't a giveaway program. This is a loan situation, and the state's going to make money on it. But at least there's no question in my mind, and most of the house members' mind, that these kind of loans are not available to to the regular commercial institution.
Ed, have you had any experience where some of these type of loans have been denied?
What happened? We're dealing here, when we talk about alternate energy in the rural areas, we're dealing with people that live a lifestyle that just don't have that kind of cash in their pocket. When they walk into a bank and you try to buy an alternate energy system for $4,000 or $5,000, they'll give it to you on a 6-month notice. Right? They're not going to stretch that out enough to where those people can make their payments. So that's the purpose for this bill that I thought was attractive, that this will allow some of the people who don't have that kind of cash up front to be able to get an alternate energy system and then be able to pay that loan back over a longer period of time, like the utility bill, which will put them in it. But if the average guy that can use this alternate energy, he has 10, 15, 20,000 bucks in his pocket, he probably isn't interested in the windmill. But if he wants this alternate energy, then his chances of walking into a bank with this thing, give me $10,000 so that I can put up an alternate energy system and I'll pay back in a year, isn't going to be accepted. So this is geared to the guy out there that's the best.
question? Desire of the committee?
Who would put it out? Mr. Chairman, I have an amendment proposed. Page one, line 15, delete the words "or nuclear." I think it's probably unnecessary, I'll do, get a nuclear energy system for $10,000.
There's a motion to amend "or nuclear."
I think the amendments, the speech committee or senior purpose, it said loans may be made under this chapter to develop main production utilizing energy sources other than nuclear.
Power is a fossil and nuclear.
Fossil and nuclear.
I can see the fossil, who cares about the nuclear?
Well, but point is.
Or saying it's already admitted.
Yeah.
This one, it's loans can't be made for the purpose.
I understand that.
You think?
I think if somebody can come up with a $10,000 nuclear fuel system, that maybe they ought to go ahead and do it.
Oh, I wouldn't want it anywhere near. I could go and prohibit them.
Next amendment.
Mr. Chairman, I'm serious about that. I don't think we even want to address it. It's just, I think it's just, not something to do, having it in the bill. Not a relevant portion of it.
Okay, Senator Orsini wants to put amendment "or nuclear fuel."
Delete the words "or nuclear."
Make loans available for nuclear.
No, just delete.
Delete "or nuclear."
Yeah, and that would mean that loans could be made for nuclear fuel purposes.
How many people are in favor of the amendment? Amendment passed, "or nuclear" is out there.
How about that?
Motion.
Who's gonna have an individual recommendation?
I'll give it a due pass.
Aren't you gonna vote due pass on the bill?
I may want to vote for amendment to pass on nuclear.
If you got a waterfall, you don't have to worry about the diversion fee. You can hook her up. Help them.
I'm wearing the left though. All these things, there's never played salmon up.
We had one at Homer years before electricity came, it was a 3-inch pipe. Same price.
Just
a pipe that came down through his basement and turned on all his lights.
Yeah, it's amazing. They're clear with blood.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Should have tried to hook the first heater. You don't have any.
Senator Cobb?
What's your name?
I have to get more bills.
I got one more waiting on some.
Who's got a bill besides Cobb?
472.
Senator Orsini?
Chairman, who would take up Senate Bill 472?
Okay, we have Senate Bill 472 before us without objection. Senator Orsini, yes.
Mr. Chairman, I have the health services people. Right. Chairman, Senate Bill 472 is a special appropriation to Health and Social Services as an agency to pass through the funding to Center for Children and Parents and Anchorage Child Abuse Board. The Center for Children and Parents was under the Alaska Children's Services efforts, and the scope of the Alaska Children's Services efforts have been narrowed to by their desire to limit to residential care only. And so the Center for Children and Parents, as I understand it, will be going into the Anchorage Child Abuse Board. That's correct. And so that's part of the background for reorganization. I wonder if you could state your name and why we need the bill other than that reason.
My name is Linda Berry. I'm the coordinator with the Anchorage Child Abuse Board. With your permission, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to address the problems of child abuse in both the state of Alaska and Anchorage, give a little bit of history of the background, talk about our programs, and cost effectiveness of the programs. I think we all have heard that the problems of child abuse are very high in Anchorage, and I'd like to share with you some of the indicators of why we're seeing such a problem. One of the factors is that Anchorage's population has doubled in the past 7 years. We're seeing a flood of new people who come to Alaska, come to Anchorage with high dreams for employment and family life. The reality of the situation, however, is pretty difficult. It's not easy to find good jobs. We have a high rate of unemployment. Dreams for these great jobs in new life are being shattered, leaving us with people who are transient and uprooted. Their family systems have been left behind. Their mobility is high. It's very often unfamiliar with the resources available to them in the Anchorage community. There are times in which we're finding families who have been disabandoned as a result of the shattered dreams. We're also seeing problems of alcohol and heavy drinking, which are extremely high. There is a distinct lack of after school and daycare facilities, leading to the neglect of a child, or leading to a parent who's being cooped up with a child all day long and cannot get out of that 24-hour situation. It's interesting to note that the last dream program, which was an after-school daycare facility, is now closed due to lack of funding. Another problem we're seeing is isolation. What is now considered a nuclear family has come up to Alaska. They've left all their extended family behind, so their dad area of support is no longer available to them. We have a very young population. And again, with the cutoff of the extended family, we have young parents who do not have experience raising children, trying to do that without the kind of support that they need to have. Being fairly new to the area also, their friends are limited. The climate is also restrictive, which restricts their availability of friends. Church and social groups are also isolated from them, leading to a situation in which the family is unable to meet their needs outside of the family situation. What happens is that the children are often expected to meet the family's needs, and we know that that really doesn't work. We're also seeing a disintegration of the American family unit, which to me is saying that so many people who are single parents or recently divorced parents are trying to raise their children on their own, again, placing the children in a position of trying to meet their parents' needs. We have urban shock, we have rural people who are coming to the city, not only natives, but people from outside who are from rural communities and are coming to the city and having a difficult time. Also seeing a high tolerance of violence in Anchorage and Alaska too. We are a frontier. We try so hard sometimes to be sophisticated, but basically in many ways we are a frontier area. When you take these factors and add them, these kinds of stresses, onto a person who has the potential already to abuse a child, it creates a highly explosive situation, and so many kids are being hurt. I'd like to explain to you the purpose of the programs that we have. As Senator Cindy said, that the Anchorage Child Abuse Board and the Center for Children and Parents are merging to combine our services. One of the purposes that we have is to break the cycle of abuse and neglect by providing long-term services to families who are identified as abusive, neglectful, or at high risk of being abusive and neglected. By long term, we're talking about 8 to 16 months in a therapeutic type situation. We have some parent aides who've been working with their families for 3 years. We're not talking about short term crisis intervention, but rather long term therapy. We found that early intervention with children can lead to prevention of more serious problems in adolescence and adulthood. We can catch the children now, help them to feel better about themselves, then we can prevent some later serious problems. We're also proposing, one of the purposes, is to help keep families together, to preserve the basic family structure. So often if families remain unhelped, the situation is not going to correct itself. The family falls apart, and the children may end up in foster care or hospitalized or, in some cases, even killed. A proposed program in combining is to provide comprehensive services to high-risk families. By one, providing in-depth counseling from family, individual, and group approaches addressing both children, adolescents, and adults. We found that traditional psychotherapy doesn't work due to a very severe lack of motivation in multiple problem families. So we've developed some ways in which we think we can counteract that and help them do that. One of those is to provide an outreach program to visit families in their homes, to go into the home and encourage the family to come to reach out for help. Another way, just through the families and supportive services to enhance the success of the family council. Whatever those services might be, each family is a little different and has different needs. Provide parent aides who are volunteer lay therapists who develop a therapeutic relationship with parents over a long period of time. As I said before, sometimes it's as long as 3 years. Sometimes it only takes 6 months to develop enough strength in the family so that the children are safe at home. Another area is to provide multidisciplinary professional consultation services. These services are provided by volunteers, professional volunteers in our community, to do consultation to other professionals who are working with abusing and neglecting families. Another area is to expand the community education programs. Last year, we provided 70 programs to our church community, and we'll be able to expand those. The Center for Children and Parents serves families based on a sliding theme. We found that 80% of their families are in the lower middle income area, which means that they're not eligible for Medicaid. The higher income families will probably, if motivated, seek help from a private clinic. We are left then with people from the lower middle income area who are not able to pay for any kind of therapy treatment. Services to families served by the Anchorage Child Abuse Board are free to those families. To talk a little bit about cost effectiveness, it's of note that residential treatment of a child who has to be institutionalized is somewhere about $27,000 per year per child. If that child is in foster care, depending upon the age, I believe this is a quote from a 6 to 12 age group, it's $3,285 per year, and that's going to be raised this year, I understand. If one child were to stay in emergency shelter care for an entire year, we're talking about $25,000. With our programs, with the proposed budgets, we can provide services to an entire family. The Center for Children and Parents services would be about $1,600 for the entire family, not just an individual. That comes out to about $30 per hour in counseling and therapy, as compared to $55 to $70 per hour should they go to a private clinic. The Child Abuse Board can provide a parent aid and consultative services to an entire family for about $900 per year. Just really expensive for the services that we're able to provide. To share with you a little bit about the success of the existing programs, we're receiving a high rate of referrals from such areas as the courts and corrections, the school system, including educators, nurses, and principals, and the clergy, the public health nurses, and the Division of Social Services. Also, the center has found that as a result of a public service announcement, which was issued last May, after just a few days of making that announcement, they were backed up for 5 months as a result of self-referrals. Their intake process was just swamped, and it took them that long to be all sorted out. In about 65% of the families served by the Center for Children and Parents in therapy, they showed a marked improvement in family relationships and a curtailment of abusive behavior. Only 2 of 35 families that they served required a permanent removal of the children. At some point in the therapy, 50% of those children required emergency shelter, but at this time, only one child is in foster care. There is only one delinquent child who had to be placed in lawful reasoning. And the Child Abuse Board is seeing somewhere between 40 and 60% improvement in the families that we are able to serve with parent aids or consultation. I think it's important to note that there is a mutual dual role between the Division of Social Services and private agencies. I'm personally seeing the vision, 15 workers at the current time, each carrying somewhere between 55 and 60 protective services cases. Only able to assume the role of investigators, providing the necessary legal placement and legal action of children, toward the protection of children, and monitoring of cases. Private agencies, on the other hand, such as ours, can provide long-term therapy and support to families to help them make changes in their behaviors. It's unrealistic to expect children workers with such a high case load to be able to provide a therapy situation. They just can't do it. I've been in that role, and it's impossible to do. I think at this point I'll close. I really appreciate the opportunity to speak with you all. Bob Nelson, who is the director of the Center for Children and Parents, is here with me, and we're both very happy to entertain any questions that you might have.
Any questions, Senator Rossi?
It's like we're social services here. You're an art holder. I do have a clarification of a couple of things. Some of the data on child abuse cases seems part of the rationale for this is that the extraordinarily high frequency of child abuse cases in Alaska and Anchorage compared to like outside. Could you elaborate on those figures a little bit?
Okay, those figures were taken from several studies published. Bob might be able to help me too. I have copies of that data for the rest of the senators. Do you want to
call
them?
Could you just briefly give the national figures and give the Alaska figures?
For example, New York City is reporting about 27 cases per 100,000 people per year. Cities like Denver are showing 30 cases per 100,000 people per year. Anchorage is showing with an incredible amount, sometimes 400 to 500 cases, depending upon the statistics that we're coming up with. Even the lowest figures that I have seen.
Can you hear the years for those?
The New York City, Denver cases are reporting in, were reported in Dr. Kemp's, Dr. Helfer's book, Talking About a Child and His Family, which was published in 1972.
Is there any more recent than that, which could indicate 1971 or earlier data? The child abuse has become more.
It's become. These, however, were as a result of some intensive efforts on both of these cities' parts. Denver did a community education program, and New York City, as a result of some daily news type stories, really sensational stories, became more aware of child abuse. So they had really been some intensive programming, and these figures were coming out of that. The number will always rise. It's difficult to tell sometimes when these news is coming.
What year is Anchorage?
1977.
I understood that some
of the data
in the Department of Social Services statistics was an error. 1977. That statewide data was 546.
I think the error was in that there was a figure of 2,300 there. City of Anchorage, there were 2,300 cases in between 75 and 76 in that fiscal year, and that was a gross error. There's no way it could have been 2,300. There are about 550 cases of child abuse neglect at the city of Anchorage. I mean, the division in the city of Anchorage is carrying now.
Carrying on the books, is that in one
that means
cases that
as
occurring in one
to,
calendar year or cases?
No, those are cases that are being carried and being serviced. That doesn't mean that many happen during the year.
Okay.
We're averaging about 20 a month this fiscal year, new abuse cases.
20 a month? Is that only in Anchorage or is that speaking?
That's Anchorage.
We don't abuse our kids elsewhere.
Which should indicate about 240 per year.
I was told that that was the lowest, that the 20 a month was the lowest estimate, and it ranges sometimes as high as 50.
But that was still in the case.
But we're still high, no matter what.
Well, you know, I suppose you could well argue that one case is too much, but trying to compare, instead of this 500 per cases per 100,000 population in Anchorage, if you're looking at even at 50 cases per month, would be 300, you know, it wouldn't be 150.
Anchorage has a population of less than 200,000, and 50 times 12 would be 600. It would be about 300,000.
The figures that were quoted in the study were from public study, and we think it's contract to have it done.
Yeah. Now, you also include neglect. Is that normally included in these other comparative statistics?
To my knowledge, it is. There are some national studies that say, if they included some neglect cases, it would be up in the millions as far as national numbers of cases that would be included.
Yeah, I can see that, because what's neglect to one is neglect to another. Social worker, anything that's not perfect is neglect. Mm-hmm. So I'd much rather have the statistics on injured, you know, actually abused, because that's a hard figure.
Another question, you got some money from the LEAA funding, did CJPA do an evaluation on the effectiveness of that expenditure, what was the report?
Bob can address that best. That was funding to the Center for Children and Parents.
I'd like to speak to that. I'm Bob Nelson, I'm the director of the Center for Children and Parents. That was a grant for this last fiscal year, and as a part of that, two things were accomplished. One was treatment of 35 families. The other was designing of a treatment model for the city of Anchorage. And the evaluation was done in December of this last year, following the closing of the grant in October. Barbara McPherson with Criminal Justice Planning Agency was the one who monitored that thing.
What was the result of the analysis? Did they do an evaluation? Not an accounting evaluation, but a performance evaluation.
Right, I don't have that evaluation with me, but I can sure make that available to you.
Might be useful. Do you recall, was it favorable? Did they say it was a good thing that it continued, or something that was?
Most favorable. I think Criminal Justice Planning Agency has a letter that they have made available. I don't have that with me, but I believe the Office of the Governor has that evaluation.
Senator Tillia?
Chancey, is this in the form of a supplemental fund?
No, it's
starting a new program.
No, it's a continuation of the existing program. The LEA funds are no longer available. And the reason we're doing this to take effect July 1 is so they'll know now, if we pass the bill for in the next month, they'll know that they have the funds and they can keep going. If you put it in a budget, you might not know until June or particularly late June. So that's why we're doing it with the bill. But it's not a supplement, it doesn't take effect.
Well, didn't this the big issue that we just had with the governor's bill, cutting out all of them that appropriated next year's ahead of time? You know, I thought we'd just gotten done pulling all of that out, stuff that should be in the regular budget.
Well, most of the time we do, yeah, as a policy.
Yeah.
All the time. We have special appropriations for it.
I'm looking at the bill and the governor's D2.
Yeah, well, I didn't want to pull a bunch of them out and so that we didn't fund next year's programs before we looked at our budget.
Well, the reason for doing that is so that they'll know.
What is your budget this year for these same agencies which are going to be merged? The CJPA money is only $20,000.
That's right. Alaska Children's Services picked up the remainder totaling $72,000 for the Center for Children and Parents. And that was with a staff of two full-time staff, two practicum students from the university in graduate students in counseling psych, and supportive secretarial staff and accounting staff.
Tell the youth board what was your budget?
We had a contract with the Division of Social Services and the United Way Agency. The United Way gave us $10,000. We realized about $18,000 out of the state contract. So it was very thin.
$10,000?
I think Senator, there's a real difficulty with that, with the way in which that was handled, and that is the Division of Social Services contract, for one thing, was not utilized to its fullest and is not at the present time. That leaves an agency that's relying upon the Division of Social Services contract. It leaves it in a very shaky position. You can't continue an agency's work when you're not sure whether when a contract is put forth and it's not being utilized. One of the things that we're concerned about is getting funding that is going to be base funding. And contracts on a fee-for-service basis come above that. You can't just start up an agency or even maintain an agency when, with staff, qualified staff, when the contracts come only on a client-by-client basis.
I think it's interesting to note, too, in that I would guess less than half of our services are provided to families that are DSS families. We provide a lot of preventive services. Our referrals very often come from a public health nurse who sees a family in danger. And in order to prevent child abuse, we will have consultation and have a parent aid with that family. The contract with DSS was only for identified abusing and submitting the best advance. So therefore, it was a conflict in that we were not being utilized for.
Why is the $30 cost of the business if you have so many volunteers?
Understand that the Anchorage Child Abuse Board maintains the parent aid program. That is an entirely volunteer program in which a lay therapist, a volunteer, relates directly to an abusive parent. That is on a volunteer basis. The Center for Children and Parents is made up of professional therapists, and the $30 per session figure is for family, individual, group therapy, and parent training on a more professional level. Two different kinds of programs, both of which are really essential in working with families involved in abuse. The peer relationship of one parent to another is a very important relationship, but many of these families need more intensive therapeutic work.
So, the $15 per visit then roughly under the Child Abuse Board is
and
training and support.
Well, there was community education. providing all of those services also. All the services are free of charge.
Yeah, the Anchorage Child Abuse Board is essentially the only agency in Anchorage that is providing public information and education about the field of child abuse, other than, I think, to a certain extent, the public health nurses at this time. And that is kind of thrown in there as a part of the overhead.
Why should the Center for Children and Parents, if it is professionals and who charge for their services at going rates, be put under a separate private organization? Why not just put it in the social services?
I'm not sure I'm clear on
your
question.
Well, you said that the Center for Children and Parents are professional therapists who offer their services for money that other professionals do, yet we want to continue funding this private organization privately rather than just saying to the Social Services Division, here's some money to do the same function. And do it with state employees so that we have some control of what you do.
Okay, it's my understanding that there are really, there's a dual function between the state and private nonprofit agencies. My understanding of that is that the state is mandated to provide certain kinds of services, such as receiving reports, investigation of those reports, legal action if necessary, protective custody, paying for the shelter if say a kid is in need of shelter, and then monitoring those families. Whereas the private sector really has the longer term therapy, the parent training, parent aid programs, operating the shelters. As you may know, the shelters that are operated in Anchorage are operated by private nonprofit agencies under contract with the city. Community education. It's my opinion that a private nonprofit agency can provide community education in a much better way than the Division of Social Services can about itself and its own function. And also the whole business of consultation, both to the Division of Social Services and to other professionals and agencies that are providing services to abusive families.
If we're paying for the state is going to pay for the services, why should we pay somebody else to do it and lose control? Why shouldn't we just pay the state agency and do the same thing? Just tell them that you have additional function, here's additional money to perform that function.
Okay, I think there's several factors involved there. One, first of all, I believe that it's been stated by both the state director of the Division of Social Services and the regional manager for the South Central region that they favor contracting to private nonprofit agencies to provide those kinds of services. That they don't see the state's function being in providing those direct services. They already have their responsibilities under law.
I never heard the bureaucrat wouldn't take on additional functions if you provide the money to perform those functions.
Okay.
They object to taking on additional functions without
funding. And precisely, it's my understanding what this bill would do would be to appropriate money to health and so to HESS to provide those services.
Yeah, but they just ask to pass through agency. They don't keep any of the money. They just pass it on to, in this case, send it to the parents. My question is, why should they act as a pass-through agency? Why shouldn't they do it themselves if they're going to pay for the service anyway? You haven't given us any reasons why we should pay some other agency to do something that the state could do as long as we're paying for it anyway.
Okay, there's one other point, and it seems to me that it was at the hearing for Senate Hess that I believe Helen Byrne was suggesting that health and social services, in fact, would receive monies that would monitor this.
The department supports this approach. If the question is, are we going to add additional employees or do it through contract, there are any number of examples, particularly in the health and social services area, in which we've done it this way rather successfully. And I think it has been a general feeling that in terms of delivery of services, particularly of this type, that the state gets the best situation by contracting with private agencies. And of course, we do it on quite a few different.
Well, why don't we do it more than that? It's such a good thing. Why don't we just ban about half the social services and contract the function out?
There is a suggestion that would be an improvement and to allow social services to monitor the way in which private agencies perform. It would be the best of all worlds if you had several different private agencies doing it and you were constantly selecting the best for the funding source rather than having an expanded bureaucracy. And we have done that. In fact, some people think the more successful programs, such as the daycare program, is where that's been done. You've had private agencies actually delivering the services rather than hiring social workers.
I think one problem you get across is like in our nursing homes, where as soon as they get a monopoly, they put thumb screws on the state. So you have to have enough of two that you balance the bureaucracy off with your private installations and have the bureaucracy do enough that the private installations can't take us to the clinic.
I think I would agree with you, Senator Crock. as long as it's remembered that the state does continue to carry important and primary functions in the area of child protection. And only the state can do those functions.
Well, I don't, you know, Chancey, I don't have any real problem with the program. I think it should be included in the budget, and if there was some way to give them a statement. But, you know.
Why not just pass the bill?
Well, I just have troubles with passing bills that add on to the next year's budget. The bill is passed the House. You've got a pledge from that finance committee, and certainly this one will come through.
This is the Senate bill.
Well, that's right, your bill. Well, you know, I'm a believer in adding a thing in the budget.
It's got to go through both of the finance committees, so they're going to know that it's added to the budget, and not adding something.
Oh, I understand that. But somehow or another, adding to the budget by legislation, you know, for next year seems rather ridiculous when we have the budget in front of us that we can just put it in. I can see putting it in, and I'll support you putting it in. But I don't like writing the budget by legislation.
Senator Orson.
I wonder if you could answer a question. I have a letter from the Anchorage Women's Club concerning neglected and abused children. And their recommendation is to increase personnel in the Division of Social Services. They don't recommend an increase, they don't recommend this approach. Could you explain why they don't?
One of the things that the Anchorage Child Abuse Board has worked very hard on this past year is to increase the staff in the Division of Social Services. That has been one of our target areas. There was a conference early in March at which that was one of the primary resolutions coming out of that conference. I'm glad the Women's Club isn't supporting that, because the whole community is beginning to realize that we need some more social workers who can do some of the primary legally mandated services. I wouldn't say that's in contradiction to our law.
I think you have to remember again the division of responsibilities, and we are totally supportive of increasing the number of caseworkers and supportive staff that stand behind those line workers for the Division of Social Services in Anchorage. They need to double their line staff in Anchorage right now. But that is in protective services. We're talking about therapeutic services that go beyond.
Well, I'm puzzled as to why they don't mention your organizations.
They probably attended the conference and felt strongly supportive. We didn't even mention our bill. We were talking about giving some more social work. So that may well have come out of that.
But another of the top priorities out of the governor's conference, along with that priority, was support of nonprofit agencies that are providing therapeutic services.
The conference to address the dual role of state and county agencies.
They say, quote, you're considering several options for addressing the abused, neglected child and child and family stress situation. So, what they would recommend is increasing the staff of social services to include night hours, which is 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And there's no mention made of either of these organizations.
Well, that doesn't surprise me. I mean, if I were to write supporting an issue, I wouldn't necessarily support some other issue at the same time. I don't see that their exclusion of that necessarily negates this as a priority. It came out as one of, both of these issues came out as top priorities of the governor's conference 3 weeks ago.
Is this any way increasing this appropriation, is that going to save us any money in social services? Are they in any way performing these functions that just more than doubling of your budget would save up?
They're not performing any of those functions, which is why they are. They're not geared toward prevention.
And during the year in which we did the Criminal Justice Planning Agency work, the 35 families that were assigned to us to work with decreased the caseload for Division of Social Services. Because even though those were all open cases with the division, the regional manager assigned us to monitor, and only in the event that we we felt in, within the family that there was severe threat to any member of the family, were we then to contact Division of Social Services again. So in a sense, we were carrying on monitoring functions on a contractual basis for the division. So 35 families were lessened from caseload.
And the assumption of some responsibilities on the part of parents that meant the social workers not have to be in contact with the families as much, which is 70 hours per week. If they're carrying 50 or 60 cases, and we're talking about 15 social workers, you can understand that they just didn't have time to do a lot of monitoring. They have to attend to crisis situations. With parent aids, with consultative services that we provide, it lessens the heavy weight that they carry on their shoulders.
So there is a de facto decrease in the work on Division of Social Services, even though they still carry some of these cases as part of their responsibility if the need should ever arise.
Right. And when a crisis happens in a family, should it happen, then the parent aid would tell me and I would get with the social worker. She may not, he or she may not know otherwise. So we act as you know, we can help coordinate all the activities.
Are there any questions of these people?
Just one. Were you reading from a written statement?
I had some notes. And what I did bring with me, I'm not sure if all of you had a copy of the data for legislation, and we included our budget summary and got a copy for each of you.
I don't either.
Okay.
Senator Orsini, do you have, do you want to move on this today, or what's your desire?
It's up to the committee. Unless social services has something you'd like to add or contradict, or
well, maybe I can say.
But,
say it quickly.
Or we'll run out of time.
Okay. I'm put between on this issue a rock and hard clay. There's no question. I don't want to talk about statistics because I know that the need for child abuse workers is rather desperate, and we're in a real in Anchorage. But I can't quite agree that the social workers with the division, their only function is to investigate and monitor. That's not a description of the duties of the social space, and I think social workers in here. But saying that, I'm scared to death that you won't get money and those services won't be provided, because there is a desperate need for these services. But to say that this isn't the responsibility of the division, I really can't quite go along with that, because it's our responsibility under law to investigate child abuse and neglect and do something about it, and get those kids out of foster homes and get those kids out of institutions. And we need to provide as much counseling as we possibly can, but when the workers in Anchorage are carrying 67 cases per worker, it's impossible to do anything but investigation and monitoring. So having said that, I still support this. The need is there. But to say that the division should get out of this arena, then I think you need to change the statute.
Do you, Holbert, do you feel that the social Division of Social Services could perform the same functions at the same cost and equally as well?
You want to triple my bureaucracy, and I don't think.
Well, can you perform the same functions at the same cost as well?
And the bureaucracy has a cost, too.
Yes. I think the one area that that we can't match the public information. I think that always should be, we're not into that. We don't have the expertise in that. But as far as if you give us the staff and social workers, I think that we can do the job. And I think the commissioner said that in his position.
Well, could you do it at the same cost, or do you think that the state actually performing these therapeutic functions would be more expensive or cheaper?
I don't know. It'd be hard to say off the top of my head. I just know that it's our responsibility
on your mind. Can I speak to that issue?
Rapidly.
Fine. I really don't think the state can.
Well, tell you to be quiet.
There's a tremendous difference in cost.
you can do it
yourself,
right?
Really. Desire of the committee.
I don't like saying, and I'm willing to edit the budget, but
passing the thing to piecemeal. What you're doing is writing your budget piecemeal.
And they need to know.
I don't doubt they need to know. They're gonna, you know, I don't believe for a minute that the department can do it cheaper than these people. You know, I'm perfectly willing to put it in the budget. But you remove all negotiating room in the health and social services budget on this when you put it through. There's no way we can look in and see whether there's some segments that they should be trimmed on a little bit or anything like that. You know, it's not going through the normal budgetary process, and I think we're making a mistake.
Clem, it is only to this extent. We passed out a lot of bills here that have a fiscal impact, and a lot of those are new pieces of legislation, like this is new in my mind. And what we do with the fiscal note, even though we don't appropriate the money at the moment, the whole thing is appropriated in the end with one motion. So it's like that in a sense. And I think it's going to occur at the same time that the budget's going to be taken over.
Well, I mean, if it's just an authorization, this is an appropriation. In other words, if you were going to say that, yes, you will, you know, you will fund this organization, we put it in the budget, then we can look into whether there's any way to cut corners on the budget or whether we mesh it in with the rest of the budget. You know, it goes right in as part of the budget. I don't see, you know, I'll support putting it in the budget. I don't have any problem with that. I know these people can do it cheaper than our bureaucracy. But I just think it's a bum precedent to start writing our budget by individual piece of legislation.
Well, it doesn't bother me because we've done it in the past. We don't do it all the time.
No, we've been jerking it out of every bill that came by where that the governor sent down. You know, if he tried to write something into next year's budget, we immediately jerked it out and said, nope, that'll be in the budget or not in the budget. That should be taken care of then, but we will not let you put it in with an individual piece of legislation. Now, because one of our members wants to do it, we're going to pass it as an individual piece of legislation.
This has been done in certain cases, I know, for the past 2 or 3 years. This is not the first time.
Well, I think it's a very poor precedent. You know, as far as including it in the budget, you bet. I'm all for including it in the budget.
Well, if there's a motion.
Well, there's a motion and an objection, so vote.
No objections. How many people want to put it up?
I'll put it up, won't I?
With individual?
Yeah, I don't know.
Clem, I know it's been done. I realize what you're talking about.
Hmm? Well, we just got done jerking, yanking the governor around on vanity bills that have been.
We don't. We got a bill that's coming up next that goes through 1979.
On Bill
645.
645, the supplemental on the D2. Bob has checked with the department. The department said they absolutely have to have that figure. They can't do it any other way. So I prepared a committee substitute for that that gives the department the full amount, but adds $45,000 to the Alaska Plan Policy Committee to pick up their funding for the remainder of this fiscal year. The new executive director of the Alaska Plan Policy Committee is here. Answer any questions. I've had her go over her budget with Judy. The maximum they would need is $45,000. They might get by a little less, but it's going to be approximately that amount. That is still less. We still give them less than what the legislature appropriated last year. I do think it's important that we have that program going. I knew we'd put out that bill with individual representation.
There's an objection.
Well, we've got time for
it.
If you want to do it on a hearing, the problem is that they do need to know, and this is the last hearing we're going to have this week, and we're going into budget program next week.
Now, the thing is that this, I agree with Chancey on this one, this is the one that draws the line, stuff like that, which is one we can win on. You can go ahead with your propaganda deal on the floor, but you're going to lose on that one, I'll promise you.
Which one?
When we send a bunch of our people back to lobby against D2, they're going to just spend that much money. They're not going to win. But when
what are you talking about?
Oh, heck, you're talking about...
Alaska Plan is Alaska Higher.
Oh, I'm
not talking about putting that in the bill.
He's talking about adding it. I'm talking about the original bill. the funds.
They're talking about $5,000 for D2.
The deep destiny of Department of Natural Resources.
What, you're adding it?
No, remember we had a discussion last week, natural resources, I sent them back, can you cut any of your money requests?
Yeah, they can.
They can.
That's what he's talking about, putting that out.
No, it's in the bill.
We give them the full amount that they request.
$255,000.
And add the Alaska plan.
Yeah, what's all that?
I'm not fighting it.
All right, let's go.
I hate to run into one of the fights.
No, Joe's the one that was objecting to it.
You're the one who's arguing.
What's your objection?
Well, you know, all of a sudden you got something come up here and worried that this is all.
Well, we can hear the testimony.
Here we go.
Ma'am, you want to testify real quick why you need the money?
Number one, I'm Marva Williams. I'm with the Alaska Plan. And as of last Thursday, I was elected the executive director. Prior to that, I have operated as a field coordinator for the plan. And I can say that the state has no other type agency that is performing our function, which is to assure equal employment in the construction industry. Therefore, there could be no other agency at this time to replace us. One unique thing about Alaska is that it hasn't experienced the abrasive experience prevalent to Detroit and Chicago and Philadelphia's plan, which resulted into civil violence because there could not be and there was not a relevant dialogue established between the labor and management groups there. And for one here, we've had the cooperation of labor and management on our board to work in a cooperative manner, which has increased minority participation in the construction industry. From 1972 until December 1977, we have increased minority participation to about 1,500 minorities. Prior to that, you probably could visibly count one or two minorities in each one of those local crafts. However, through persuasion and cooperation, we have increased that minority participation. There is a need now to not only continue increasing those minorities, but to maintain them and see that they do or are given opportunities in the employment area.
The question is why we need to have you budget last year?
Last year what resulted, we were only giving $150,000. Because our staff worked in a cooperative way and was willing to take anywhere from 2 to 8 weeks off of work, we saved $22,000. This year, it's a little unfair to ask them that again, and for that reason, we need an additional $45,000. We originally requested $215,000. We only received $170,000. At this point, we have spent $150,000 of that. The remainder of that money will be exhausted in the balance of this month's salaries and our contractual services, rent, and our travel. Travel is needed to monitor those projects to see that the minorities are maintained on those construction projects.
Well, we keep running into these overruns where agencies come in and say, well, we spent more than we have, we need more money. And apparently, social services is apparently, people just don't pay attention to budgets. They feel they incur expenditures far beyond their budget level, and then say, we're out of money, we have to go out of business unless you fund us. And this is about the third or fourth crisis situation you ran into this year.
I'm sure you have heard those things. However, I wish it would be judged on the performance that I intend to project.
Well, they all perform their functions. You know, they all do their job. They just decide they want to spend more money than they have.
Ed, that this would continue the program slightly below the amount for the prior year. In that case, the legislature had appropriated a considerable amount of money. The governor had reduced it and then had come in with the supplemental. So with this supplemental, what we're doing is continuing the funding level that's really been established. I might also add that I think they are making an effort to cut their expenditures as much as possible. Marva has been with the Alaska plan, and when they moved her up to executive director, I understand that your position, the position that you did occupy, was terminated. So
that's correct.
They are trying to cut expenses as much as possible, but frankly, to continue the program at the level we've had for the past couple of years, it would take this appropriation to do it. And that is even eliminating some of their positions or, in effect, having them go vacant for a while in order to make it make
That's correct, Senator Croft. At the present, since I was in promotion within my previous position has been terminated, I've also been willing to ask for a reduction in the executive salary. I've reduced my office space. I no longer have any secretaries aboard, and I've deleted some of the telephone systems.
Yeah, but we also, the last several years, in pipeline construction, which has been a terrific level of construction activity compared to the more normal ongoing activity we're in now. And the whole pipeline agencies were supposed to have been, particularly those related to construction, were supposed to have been reduced or deleted in some cases. And yet somehow they still keep hanging on.
But
that happened. The agency has been successful. I'm not arguing that. And apparently they're doing what they're supposed to do. And so we've alleviated the problem to a large extent. And the question is, do we need to go as full bore as we did on both the problem in the first place and the level of construction activity in the second place?
Sure, because the Alaska plan has primarily to do with public construction. There were separate agencies that were concerned with such things as the pipeline construction. The Alaska plan has mostly to do with state construction, and that level of activity is going to continue or increase.
Wasn't the pipeline construction?
Yes,
it did work on the pipeline as well. There were federal agencies as well that were involved to make sure that worked.
And because
of
the
pipeline.
Because that was the majority of the construction at that time, is why we were highly concentrated around the pipeline. However, the intent is for the total construction industry within the state of Alaska. There is a need to continue because you still have those minority people here in the state. No matter if there isn't a large abundance of construction, there's still a state contract in that there are schools to be built, there's gymnasiums.
We're still here.
Still the minorities here.
If there's discrimination in construction, isn't that the function of the Human Rights Commission?
After the fact. What are we going to do with it now? They are after the fact. If a problem results, we do not hesitate to refer them to those proper sources. However, we try to work within cooperation for the present and referring them to them.
Could I ask you how many of those 1,500 are Alaska Native?
Oh, gosh.
I don't care about the foreign minorities.
Now, let me break down what minority means. Alaska Native, American Indians, Asian, female, black, and Spanish.
Yeah, that's throw the females in there really baffles the whole thing. How many are Alaska Native? That's the one I want to find out.
You're asking me something up here at this time because I wasn't prepared for the testimony.
Well, we're going to have to get out of here. We're going into session. Are you going to be here tomorrow?
Yeah.
Sure, yeah.
Can I do it? Yeah, sure. What time do we get here? We're still at the call.
We're
15
minutes over now.
They called us.
Well,
yeah.
We put it out.
Paul, does anybody have any other questions?
Perhaps all the one I wanted to know is how heavy they're concentrating on Alaska.
Just one question. What is their this year's budget?
The rest. I would say that they are the larger of our minority.
What's
the
weight fund?
225.
How much?
Because they are
the bigger,
larger
minority.
Which
was really,
yeah. Well,
as long as
it
runs on population,
yes, it is. We're trying to
put it
out.
Okay. Is there a motion?
I move we put it out into the recommendation.
Would you get that information for Senator Tillian?
Yes, I
will. And any other information that Senator Garcini might want?
I want
that would satisfy his question. I think Senator Rader set up a meeting of our committee with the House committee with Gravel at 10:30 or something like that.
Yeah.
But I think he's going to announce it on the floor.
You mean in 15 minutes?
I think so, yeah. Down in the corner place on the second floor.
We heard Dale Harmon.
Well, we've changed this meeting. 1:30 joint?
Yeah. Indeed, they changed the meeting so many times. That was yesterday.
Yes, sir.
I heard it was yesterday.
But it was yesterday.
That was a secret meeting.
And
No, it's not the point. It's coming in, we're just operating on a budget that we don't have.
It doesn't like you run over your budget.
You
got off kind of easy when one of the local bureaucrats comes in and starts over the budget. We want a piece of hide and blood.
The thing is, you got a budget starting the fiscal year, whether governor veto it or whatever the problem is, that's your budget. And
if you can't live within your budget, you shouldn't live.
Spending at whatever level they seem to think is appropriate, coming in here and saying, well, if you don't give us money, we're going to go out of business, and all these functions are going to be dropped. Yes. You know, the thing is, the more we let it happen, regardless of however good the cause is, and the other one had to run on there, and Homemaker Services program, which is a fine program.
Call the meeting to order. Senate Finance, meeting for the purpose of listening to the University of Alaska budget. Members have a proposed agenda on their desks, which would call for a review of the short form, the workbook, review questions and intent. These first two items are being conducted by Mr. Scott, after which we scheduled the overview of the budget by Rodney Faith and President Evo.
The committee has before them two documents, the revised short form, revised 330, plus a workbook, which is in addition to the short form. The reason we have the workbook is because this short form includes the zero-based analysis that the university developed at the request of the budget audit committee this year for fiscal 79. And the workbook is an attempt to help detail that zero-based incremental review into the basic budget document. In the short form, you'll notice within the document, columns 10 through 13 on any one of the pages. Maybe we can take the first page and I can walk the committee through it to make sure everybody understands it. For those figures. Page 19 might be the easiest one to go through. Notice on page 19 that there are figures in columns 10 through 13, and that these columns have a new heading on them in terms of the short form document. UA 90%, UA 95%, UA RB, which is revised base, and UA CS, which among other things stands for current services. The 90% and the 95% columns are the levels that were requested of the university by the Budget and Audit Committee and through legislative intent last summer. It reflects the allocation to each component if the university only had 90% of the general fund dollars available to it that it had in fiscal 78, and then the same thing at 95%. So this shows the four stages the university went through in the zero-based analysis and the zero-based review, and those are the dollars involved in each of those levels. You then would move from column 10 through 13, and then jump to column 6 and 7, which is the normal budget request process. Column 6 and 7 reflects maintenance and request. So the way this document was built, we would start with column 10, and the increases would move from column 10 to 11, 11 to 12, 12 to 13, and 13 to 6, and 6 to 7. That's the way it flows. 6 and 7 being the normal columns. Yes.
Explain 12 and 13.
Yes. UA revised base. 12 gets the university back to fiscal 78 totals, and that's what revised base means. This is how they would reallocate the same dollars they had in fiscal 78. So column 10 is 90% of that figure, column 11 is 95% of that figure, column 12 would be the same figure they had last year, basically. Column 13 would be current services for 79, which supposedly includes dollars for salary base increments and inflation. That's the difference.
what column would be the Senate column?
In the normal short form, column 10 would be the Senate column. I'm taking that out for purposes of this hearing. And we put it back in at the time the committee made some decisions.
What about the governor?
Governor's column, the governor made a lump sum allocation, as did the House at this point. And both of those allocations are shown in the short form on page 5. So that's why there's blanks in all the other governor's column and House columns throughout the document. They have not made a detailed distribution yet of their figures.
Have you been over this one figure?
In terms of being over it.
I mean, comparing it with.
In terms of total, yes. The governor has not indicated any distribution of this figure, nor has the House. The House plans to meet Wednesday and Thursday with the university and make a tentative distribution of this figure at that point. But we don't have any details from either the governor or the House at this time. The workbook works in conjunction with the short form, and maybe we can use page 19 again as an illustration. In the workbook, there are page references back to the short form. In this case, we'd be looking at page 18 of the workbook. And there's 18 A, B, and C, because it took 3 pages to cover statewide. 18. The way the workbook works, everything starts from column 10. And you'll see out on the very left-hand side of the workbook, a column entitled column, and it has column numbers in it. And the way this works is that everything starts from column 10. You'll notice in the short form that there's a difference in the dollar total between column 10 and 11, between 65.17.7 and 63.67.8. That dollar difference is identified in the workbook, and all those entries that have column 11 identified on. If you go to the workbook, you see the first 8 entries have column 11. Those identify the differences between column 10 figure and column 11 figure. Those are the add-ons at that level. Column 11 and 12 are different, and the items identified in column 12 in the workbook are the items that make up the difference between the column 11 and column 12 total. That's how you use the workbook.
No. This goes through that little lower chart
Everything starts off with column 10. The workbook shows the additions at each column above column 10. So all the items marked column 11 would be those items that were added to column 10 to make column 11 totals in the short form.
And that's in the exam.
All right. You start off in column 10 on the page 19, a total of 6367.8.
16.
Which is the total, right about the middle of the page. Total expenditure. Total expenditure, 6367.8. Column 10.
Okay.
Column 11 is 6517.7. That is a difference of 149.9. You go back to the workbook on the items marked column 11, and you'll see a total of 149.9 in items that were added to column 10. And that's how it works.
How would you give us the strip on 12?
Yes. All right. That establishes column 11 total. And column 12 has a total of 6620.9, which is a difference of 103.2 from column 11.
Same difference
is adding up those items identified as column 12 additions. And that's how you move between the columns.
Some of that movement involve new positions.
The thing I should point out is that in all of 10 through 13, 10 through 12 at least, supposedly these are all current activities of the university. And what they're doing is they're going backwards down to 90 and saying if you took column 10, you would not have any of these items in the university budget. Any items identified in column 11, 12, and 13 would not be included if you adopted column 10 as a university budget. Column 10 is lower than the current year. Anything identified in column 11, 12, and 13 should be current spend or current programs.
11 also?
Yes. Anything identified in 11, 12, and 13 would be current programs. Programs currently going on. And this is how they would add them back in if they had to be cut down to 90 and then start forward. These are the programs that would be left out at column 10.
But 11 says 95%.
That's right, but that's 95% of current year. So these are all current year programs that are adding. We're starting from 90% below current base, which means they had to cut out things to get down to 90. They had to drop things out of their current year budget to get down to 90%. That would be the base.
Well, then I would think that just 12 and 13 would be the current.
Well, current, column 11 is still below the base. So any item in column 11, any item in column 12, and any item in column 13 would be things they're currently doing that they would have to do without if you went down to 90%.
Well, how can you do 100% at 95%?
You can. 100% is including column 12. Column 12 is 100%. So you take column 10, which is below the current year, you add in all those items in 11 and 12, you get back to the current year. So all those are current programs. Shouldn't be any new positions. I think that was your question. Now, the reason I put it into the short form in one document is because the university did their zero-based analysis in two pieces. They did the regular budget first, and then went back and did a zero base after that. And there was considerable confusion about the process. And you'll find, and this is another place to show the example, I think, when I tried to put the two documents together, it resulted in considerable confusion because the university didn't do the two systems. They did not work these things in coordination. The zero base budget was done completely separate from the regular budget. There's no coordination between the two in terms of the documentation, or even the dollar amounts that were being used. They changed the totals midway through the process and didn't come back and change the totals in the zero-based package. So there is an overlap, and the overlap exists in column 6. And moving from column 11 to column 6, in some cases, the university did not have enough money to do that because they did not coordinate the two projects. If you go to page 72 in the workbook, I can show you an example of one. 72B, your boy, our budget. And 72B, you'll see an entry in column 6, the very first entry at the top of the page. Next page. You see an entry, funding for merit promotion allocation, $64,800. When the university built its zero-based analysis, it started, rather than starting from fiscal 78, as they were asked to do, they started from a fiscal 79 figure. They added salary increase and inflation before they started to work the zero-base, and they worked backwards. They didn't properly account for that salary increase, so when I worked forward, I had a slop over in column 6, and I had to handle that by showing some minus figures. In other words, they didn't detail the salary increase in the zero-based analysis. They left it out. And in order to properly account for it, I had to show a net figure in column 6 in order to accommodate. Column 6 is the only area where we have a problem merging these two budgets. And I did it by putting a net minus in there. So that the dollar difference in the short form between column 13 and column 6 equals the workbook. And the workbook can only be done, I can only do the workbook by showing a minus. So we had a net figure result. What this means is that you could not get all the items identified in the workbook in column 6 without increasing their appropriation beyond the figure that's shown in the short form.
Does that appear in all items or just salaries?
Salaries. But there is some initial confusion, and if we go through this component by component, those will show up. I just wanted to explain it now so you can prepare for it. But there was some confusion in the way they did the document. These are the basic source documents that we'll be working from, the short form and the workbook, and that's how they work together. The other item, Mr. Chairman, we had staff had worked up some questions when the university originally appeared before the House, and I reviewed those questions again last night for areas that I felt needed clarification for the benefit of the committees. And I have those available to the committee. I can pass those out at least to show you the areas I've been attempting to have the university discuss as they make their various presentations. Yes. And those basically represent the same areas of discussion that we had in the House side on the university budget. university received a copy of this at that time, but I can give another copy now. That's really all I have to start off with.
The committee members comfortable with the form? Do you have questions?
Well, we probably have some that we can go along with.
Senator Wheeler, you have any questions?
I'm sure I might sat here and listened to it. Not that much.
You don't have any.
I don't know. I'm beginning to get a feeling.
What you said is column six, the difference between your 14 and 28?
Yes.
Sounds like I have.
It'd be the same as the rest of the one. You add all those items in column six and the woodwork, and it should be the difference between 13 and six. What I found is that there was some kind of overlap.
I think I understand, except the difference here is about 16.
That's okay, is that okay?
That is an example of how mixed the difference.
Early then.
Yeah.
So we have.
Heavy call.
14, 28.